Welcome to the big show, to another edition of the iPhone Photo Show, the show where we teach you how to get the most out of your iPhone camera, whether you shoot video or stills, no matter what you're into, we got you. We're here to help you. My name is Scott Bourne. I'm your host, and joining me today as my co-host, as usual, the one and only Mr. Jefferson Graham. How are you, Jefferson?
I'm good, Scott. Glad to be here again.
I'm glad to be anywhere. Hey, today we're talking about light. You know why? Because without light, you can't make a photograph.
That's true. And sometimes you can use light to take your photographs to the next level, like somebody I know.
Yeah. And sometimes you can actually take light and its partner, shadow, and tell a complete story. So we're talking about that. Doesn't matter whether you use an iPhone camera, DSLR, mirrorless camera, you got to understand light. I don't see enough, Jefferson, of people learning and teaching light in general today. And I certainly don't see it in the mobile community. So we're going to rectify that by just, you know, giving some very quick basics. Obviously, 20-30 minute podcast, we can't teach you everything, but we're going to cover some of the things that we think will help and talk about some gear and all that stuff. Before we do that, is there anything you'd like to say about the iPhone and a new one maybe coming?
Well, first, I just want to say that most people that take photos with their iPhones take them in natural light. So this is going to be really interesting. And anybody who has seen any of Scott's recent toy photography work at the iPhone photo team or on Facebook or on Twitter, and it's just like, I assume that their jaws are open because the work is so amazing. So you're going to learn a lot today. iPhone, traditionally, at the end of August, I always recommend folks, if you're thinking about buying a new iPhone now, that would be a very stupid thing to do, because within a few weeks, there's going to be a brand new iPhone. And if history is any guide, it's going to be smaller, bigger, lighter, heavier, thinner, faster, more advanced than any phone has ever been in the history of phones. And they're going to make you want to buy it. So if you can just wait a few weeks, you'll get a way better deal. And if you don't want to buy it, if you don't want to buy that phone, but you're willing to wait 4 weeks, the current iPhone 13 model will be $100 less. That's the first thing they do when they announce the new iPhone, is they lower the price of the old one by $100. So this year, in the fall, there'll probably still be a 13 and a 12, and then they'll discontinue the 11. So the 12 should be even cheaper. So good deals for all if you can wait. My prediction is that we'll hear about the new iPhone right after Labor Day, and then we will see the first of many, because there's going to be four new iPhones. We'll see the first of them probably by around the 25th of September, and a second round in October. That's the scuttlebutt at this point. I know Scott can't wait to buy himself a new iPhone. Right.
I am going to wait. I'm going to wait on two things. I'm going to wait until you buy one first. Now, I don't know. That'll be like the first hour. So who knows? Maybe I'll buy one in the second hour. But I want to see how many megapixels it has. I'm concerned about the rumors that there's going to be 48 megapixels. I'm sorry. My hobby is math. I did linear algebra for fun in college. And there's just some stuff related to physics I can't get my arms around. But, you know, I'm going to have an open mind. And also, some of the very, very first phones that ship tend to have problems. That's something I've experienced myself. Although, you do have a return policy of 30 days. Keep all the boxes, paperwork, open it up carefully.
I think it's 14.
Oh, I thought it was 30 on the new ones.
Well, check your box. Check your fine print.
Yeah, whatever it is, that might hold me back a little bit. But I will probably have one. I'm just shocked to think about my 11 being, you know, end of life. This is a great phone. Yeah, I used the 11 a lot, and the camera on it was great. Now, obviously, not as great as what we have now, but it's funny how fast the stuff moves forward, Jefferson. And of course, we're going to have all, and I do mean all, the details once they're announced, and we will have a plethora of punditry to go with that.
Yeah, I just can't imagine being the co-host of the iPhone photo show and not buying the new iPhone. So it's part of my job. That's the way I look at it.
Well, I don't see it quite that same way. As long as one of us has it. Yeah. Listen, you know me. I'll probably end up buying it. I buy everything. Yeah. You know.
You buy more stuff than I do. Yeah.
I do. I'm guilty. But I just, you know. I wasn't planning to buy the 13. I was resolute. I didn't care what it did. I wasn't going to buy it. But then they said it had ProRes, and I crumpled like a paper bag. Yeah. So, you know, it could be one of those things. I go, maybe. And then they go, but it does this. And I go, holy moly, I got to have it. So if I won't, you know, I'll probably have one. But I might wait a day or two or an hour. I don't know.
Okay. Well, I'll pre-order and to make sure that I have it on opening day. So we'll be able to do an instant Friday podcast, unboxing and all, because it would arrive Friday morning. So maybe we don't post our podcast at 6 a.m. Maybe we ask our listeners to wait till 10 a.m. that day.
Yeah. On that day, we will. You know, now in the old days, you and I had enough juice to maybe get an iPhone before it was released. But those days are gone for me.
Well, you never know. That may happen. Who knows?
Yeah.
But in the past few years, even at USA Today, I would get it on the Friday. They would send me the review copy on the Friday.
Yeah, it's rough. It's rough. Anyway, just be assured we're going to tell you all about it. Before we go on, I do want to say one thing. This show is made possible by my good friend, Dr. Larry T. And we're talking about Platypod, of course, platypod.com. I posted a picture on Facebook the other day, Jeff, where I was using four Platypods at once. And each of them had a very distinct job. I can't do my job without Platypod. And they have some incredible specials on things that are important to iPhone users, like the ability to mount the phone into a special caddy. And they've reduced the price on the Platypod disc, so you can make things into Arca Swiss mounts really quickly. So just go to their website, platypod.com, and buy the stuff, man. You'll be so happy you did. And I was saying this before they were sponsors, so I'm telling you, I've been with Larry since the day he started. He's one of the best people I know. He cares about photography and photographers. If you have any doubt, buy that stuff. And here's what I'm willing to say. If he doesn't take care of you, you let me know, and I will personally intercede on your behalf. That's the strongest endorsement I can give.
Okay. Well, let me just say that if you've checked out any of Scott's photos that we're about to speak about, you'll see the Platypod being used for lighting. So that's an interesting segue.
We hope you enjoyed the interview with Larry, where he told you how to use the iPhone and the Platypod. And we're going to tell you more about that later in further shows, because they're going to be with us for a little while at least. Today, we're going to talk lighting. And one of the ways I do use the Platypod often is to place a light. Now, let's talk about the basics of light, Jefferson. Is it okay if I just riff here for a minute?
Please do.
Okay. The main thing to know about light is the bigger and closer it is, the softer it is. Now, I know what you're thinking. That's counterintuitive. You're like, well, it'll be too bright. It won't work. It'll blow things out. No. The bigger and closer it is, the softer it is. Now, you don't always want soft light. Sometimes you want hard light. You want to make a point. But most of us, particularly if we're taking pictures of people, want soft light. So you want a big source of light, the biggest you can afford, as close as you can get. I'm talking like just off camera to the subject. Now, that's just the most basic thing there is. Now, I'm doing a lot of toy photography, Jefferson. The toys are between 6 and 12 inches tall. So if I buy a 6-inch LED light, guess what? I've got the equivalent of a 6-foot Octobox from Elinchrom that costs $4,000 in terms of size of light. So that's what's so fun for me about toy photography. I just take a little little 4, 6, or 8 inch LED light. And it's a gigantic light compared to the size of the figure, which means I'm going to get nice, soft light. And okay. I like that.
Well, not everybody out there is going to be shooting toys. Probably more likely they're going to be shooting pictures of their kids, of a model, of parents, family members that they don't use lighting for. So let's give them some ideas on what they could do with an LED light. What comes to mind for you?
Well, you want to get a bigger LED light for people. And you can buy an 18-inch LED light, which will look really huge. I know lots of portrait photographers that work with 18-inch LED lights. And you can provide the key light, the fill light, the background light, whatever you want to do, as long as you get it really close. And you don't have to buy anything, Jeff. You can just use a white piece of paper taped to some cardboard and bounce the sun back into the face of your subject, and you're good to go with natural light. Just remember, when you're doing this, the sky, look where the sun is. You got to know where the sun is relative to your subject. Now, if you remember, Jeff, when you bought Kodak film, there was a little instruction booklet that came with it. Did you ever pull that out and read it?
I sure did.
And what was like the first thing it said? It said, make sure the sun's behind you when you take your pictures. And what they were talking about is they wanted to make sure that things, quote unquote, came out. So they knew that if the sun was behind the photographer, there'd be a front fill. Wouldn't necessarily be fancy or pretty, but there would at least be enough light to record an image. So that might be a starting place. But here's what I'm going to suggest to you. I'm going to put that on its ear and say, put the light behind the subject and bounce it from behind into their face. It'll be gorgeous. And like I said, if you have a nice reflector that you bought from B&H, that's fine. But you can do it with a big old piece of cardboard and white paper.
Okay.
Have you ever tried that?
I have not, because generally when I'm mobile, I don't have white paper in my pocket or a piece of cardboard. So I'm going to have to put it in my bag, I think.
Okay, I think you should. Or you could just buy a reflector that pops up for about 10 bucks and do the same thing. Another thing you can do is subtract light. And that's another thing that sounds counterintuitive. But if you're outdoors and the sun is high, you're going to get harsh shadows. So find some shade and point the person at the sky, and there'll be a catch light. And as long as they're completely in shade, it'll still look pretty because there's enough light on a sunny day anyway to light them up. But indoors, if you're working with people or pets or macro, you're probably going to want an LED light. Flash, if you know how to use it, can be very powerful for stopping motion. But lately, I hear from people they prefer what we call hot lights, because in the old days, they used to get hot. Now they're not hot anymore because they're LEDs. And what you see is what you get.
Okay, and how are we going to use flash on an iPhone? Are you talking about the terrible flash on the iPhone? No.
I'm talking about running a wireless or wired sync cord to a standalone strobe that just works with the iPhone. You never use the iPhone flash. That's rule number one here on this show, isn't it?
Yes.
Rule number two is you never put the flash on the camera. That includes the iPhone camera. You get it off the camera. You can do any number of things. You can buy a stand that holds it if you're by yourself. You can have a friend hold it. You can put it on a fence, a desk, whatever. Get the flash off
Platypod.
The phone. And I was about to go right there. If you buy a Platypod, the cheapest Platypod, it comes with all kinds of holes with which you can run straps through, and you can use it to position the light wherever you want it.
But so, have you found a flash that actually can connect to the lightning port on the iPhone?
Only with a bunch of conniption fits.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't recommend flash. I recommend LED.
Have you found a Bluetooth flash?
Yes, I have.
Oh, okay.
But I don't remember it. Uh-huh. Because, again, I'm just not interested in using flash. I'd rather use constant lighting, LEDs, and you can just move them around. And in fact, I'll be honest with you, sometimes I use the LED, LED light in the iPhone as a light source. I take one of my other iPhones and use it to bring in a little tiny kicker light, we call it. A kicker light is just a small light that establishes something that helps light up maybe a little bit of the hair, grease some background separation. You never know when you're going to need a kicker light. I do want to take some time, Jefferson, before I forget, to mention that it's very important, if you're serious about portraiture, to learn all the different types of lighting. There's broad lighting, short lighting, there's butterfly lighting, Rembrandt lighting is probably the one most people are familiar with. There's clamshell lighting. Just search any of these terms on YouTube, or look up a guy named Tony Corbell or Clay Blackmore. There are tons of people that teach lighting. The important thing is you just winging it is not going to get it anymore. You've got to get serious. We always say treat your camera like your big boy or your big girl camera if you want pro results. Well, that comes to lighting too. I do want to briefly mention just a couple of quick things and just run you through them, like three or four of those I just mentioned, and teach you about them. If you know these, your pictures are going to look so much better than your friends, so they'll be jealous. Let's start with broad and short lighting. This is lighting 101, and it's really simple. Broad lighting and short lighting simply refer to the side of the face that's lit by your light source. So with broad lighting, you light the side of the face that's closer to the camera. And with short lighting, you light the shadow side, the side of the face that's further from the camera. And one of the things that makes a lot of my images, whether they're people or toys, look interesting, Jeff, is I use a lot of short lighting because it's very dramatic. Okay? Light illuminates, shadows define. We need both to really get depth in a picture. Another form of lighting is split lighting, which is one of my favorites, which you just light half the face. Very dramatic. One of the things that works best on men, by the way. And if you're photographing women, clamshell lighting. That's simply a light that's opened up like a clamshell below and above the subject. It's super easy to do. And then there's that last one that is always a good go to, Rembrandt lighting, which is about a 45 degree angle off the camera to the right or to the left, creating just a little loop shadow on the other side of the nose, and the light barely wraps around the face a little bit. These are things that you can do with just one light.
Okay, I've got a question for you. When I have pulled out the lights and then pulled out the iPhone, sometimes the automatic sensors do not like what they see, and I've had to switch to my Sony camera, which is the Sony was much more generous with accepting the lighting than the automatic sensors of the iPhone. What has been your experience?
Well, I don't generally use the iPhone app, as I've told people here on this show many times. I use Reflex, R-E-E-F-L-E-X, or I use First Light from Filmic Pro. These are professional apps that allow me to take control. And because I use those apps, Jefferson, I don't really know the answer to your question because I don't have that problem because I don't use the iPhone app for much.
So on the Filmic app, you theoretically can set it to 60th of a second and f5.6 and set the white balance. And
you can do all that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can do all the things you would do on your Sony camera. And you can, you have all kinds of tools, like perhaps you might be familiar with zebras, or you might be familiar with histograms. These tools are all available on so-called real cameras. They're available on the iPhone through some of these apps. All of them are less than $15.
I should just mention on apps, based on what you were talking about, I was at a photo shoot. It was outside, and the person I was with wanted to do a silhouette. It was at 6 p.m., and the sun was just about to set. And when I opened up the iPhone camera app, it would let me underexpose by 2 stops. When I opened up the Camera Plus 2 app, or Camera 2 Plus, I think it's Camera Plus 2, six stops. I could underexpose by six stops. That was the difference between the Pro app and the automatic app. So,
yeah, my goal is to help people who listen to our show get off automatic and learn how to do things in manual. Now, there are plenty of times when the iPhone automatic is going to work good. One of those might be a time lapse, for instance. I've rarely seen a bad time lapse from an iPhone on automatic. That's fine. And night mode is very good. And portrait mode, if you know what you're doing, can be good. But the pro modes in these other apps give you so many more choices, and it's not that difficult. Let's move on. I want to talk about real quickly about lighting ratios. Now, we talk about light. We have a key light and a fill light if we're using two lights. The key light is the main light, as you might suspect, and the fill light pushes just a little light onto the other side of the subject. And by the way, you can have a key light and a fill light on a person, a house, a car, a cow, a barn. It doesn't matter. They can all be lit the same way. So your key light should be around 3 to 4 times stronger than your fill light. And we used to call that a lighting ratio, let's say, of 3 to 1. And we would use handheld meters and set one strobe for 3 times brighter than the fill light. And away we go. Now, there's another kind of lighting called three-point lighting where you have a lighting in the back. It either lights up the background or you point it at the back of the head of the subject and it creates a slight rim light. And the reason for that is to create separation between the subject and the background to create the illusion of 3D space. Because remember, we live in a 3D world. We're working in a 2D medium. So having three lights is optimal. Perfect example of having multiple light sources. I posted a picture on my Flickr page today, which, by the way, is under the name figphotos.com, figphotos.com. I will put that in the show notes. There's a big light behind Batman, who's sitting on his bat cycle, and that light is pointed straight at the brick wall behind him to create separation. Then there's a key light, which is on the camera right, and a fill light, which is on the camera left. It's a three-light setup, and that's a fairly typical thing for me to do, and that's a fairly typical thing for most portrait photographers to do. It's a typical thing for most video people doing an interview to do, stand-ups with three lights. So if you can learn how to do this, you can start working at pro levels. But I also want to end this show, Jeff, by talking about the other component that doesn't get enough press, and that's shadow. If everything is brightly lit, it's a boring photo. We need shadows to help define what's going on. So I like to work with dramatic pictures. I have a picture of Mandalorian and Batman that I recently did. They're mostly in shadow. There's just a little bit of a kicker light on the face and a tiny bit of fill on the other side. This is because those kinds of pictures are more interesting. You want to have some drama. If everything's flat and front lit, that's technically a good photograph because you can see what's in the image, but you want to start playing around and, you know, try some drama. And here's the great thing. We're not buying film anymore, Jeff. This is free. You can try all this stuff for nothing. Just try it this way. Try it that way. Move the light here. Move the light there. And my very last thing I want to say is beware the enemy of all photography, mottled light. Mottled light where you've got shadow and bright light falling on the subject at the same time. Like if you have the light coming through the trees and you see the leaf shadows on their face, this is ugly with a capital UGG. Don't do it. Get the person in either all sun or all shade. I have riffed long enough, unless you have questions.
I'm going to say that on shadow and drama, they're fun to see, but as a working portrait photographer, if I did that to my clients, they would scream bloody murder.
And well, you had the wrong clients.
No. For family photos, you do not want to have shadows and drama.
I disagree about as much as possible. But hey, that's why we're both on this show.
Yeah, okay. That's fine.
I've made 50,000 portraits in my lifetime, Jeff, using the techniques I just described.
Well, hopefully they're not heavily dramatic.
They're not always. But let's say we're talking a headshot for an actor. For a headshot for an actor, you want one straight-on, pretty well-lit shot, like you're describing, but also one dramatic shot. They all like to have a dramatic shot. So if it's a man, I'll often do split lighting. Now, with a family, all of this gets a lot tougher because you pretty much have to front fill everything. But I'm sorry, I disagree. I don't think flat lighting is attractive. Maybe your clients do, and if so, you should keep doing it.
I would agree with you on the actor portrait, but on the family portraits, no. It's not going to work. And I will also say that one year at USA Today, they wanted new headshots of everybody. And they decreed that everybody should have half of their face in the shadow and half of it in the light. It looked ridiculous. That's just me. So
everybody's entitled to their opinion. And that's why we are both on the show. We present point, counterpoint. We often disagree on this one. Probably the biggest disagreement we've ever had. I very strongly disagree with your sentiment.
But I do think that Scott's toy photos are out of this world and his lighting is out of this world. And I would just like to now take you out from the toy set that you have built to Labor Day, and there's going to be a whole bunch of families getting together, and that's a perfect time for family photos. Everyone's going to be pulling out their iPhone. So we would like our listeners to bump up their photography to the next level. Should they now buy an LED light, an 18-inch LED light? What should they have ready for them to bring their photos to the next level, do you think?
Well, for family portraits, here's what I'd recommend. If you're doing it indoors, you want reflectors or big light sources, and I would put those lights behind the family so that they create a rim light, and then use front fill to make sure that they're fairly evenly lit. That's a fairly traditional family portrait style. You want separation between the family and the background.
Okay, so that's one light behind them and one light in front of them?
Yeah, you know, depending on if you're outdoors, ambient light can be in front, and maybe you bounce some light off the sun or whatever into the back. If you're in the studio, yeah, you point the light literally at a reflector behind them. That punches the light from behind them and creates a rim light, and then you have a front fill that makes sure everyone's illuminated evenly. But I have a hint at how you might do this, Jeff, in a way where it's going to be flat lighting, and I will agree with flat lighting in this case, and that is put everybody in a circle and stand up on a ladder over the top of them and shoot straight down on them. That's always a fun shot.
Okay.
Or just be sure you can stand on a ladder.
Half a circle. Not a complete circle.
I like them both. Depends on how many people there are.
Let's say that it's a family of four. Then you've got it made. If it's a family of 20, that's a little problematic.
That's a half circle if you got 20. But one of my best, most successful CEO headshots I did wasn't really a headshot at all. He wanted all of his team in the shot, and he had about 40 people, and he wanted me to put him in a circle. So I did. And I did get him to do a 3/4 circle, which he ended up buying. But I stood up on a really tall cherry picker, shot straight down on him. And the beauty of this is all the double chins go away. Everybody's in the same plane of focus. It looks really nice, and you don't have to use those stupid risers, stand people above each other. But try some stuff. Look, here's the thing. Photography is about experimentation if you're learning. So, have a couple of reflectors and move them around and see what looks best.
Yeah, like we always say, we don't have to buy film. We don't have to pay for development. We don't have to, it's great.
Yeah, I think it's the best time ever to be a photographer, Jeff, because I used to have to pay a quarter a slide when I was experimenting with this stuff. Or even worse, before that, we'd have to pull Polaroids when we were working with Hasselblad 2.25 format. We'd put on a Polaroid back, set the lighting, take a picture, pull the Polaroid, shake it, wait for it to develop, say, no, it's too much on the fill. We got to cut that back. Take another picture, shake the picture. It was horrible compared to today.
Well, let's go to the picks, because my pick is right in sync with what we've been talking about today. It's called the Westcott X-Drop Backdrop Kit. This is a $100 backdrop kit that is very mobile, and you could take it with you to Labor Day. It fits into basically like a lighting bag. It is unlike the backdrop kits that many photographers are familiar with the two giant poles that go on the left and the right, and then a pole in the middle. This is way more compact, and at $100, affordable, light. You can walk with it everywhere, throw it in the car. And if you're up for doing, you know, I like a neutral background myself. I think those are the best kind of, backdrop portraits. I don't like to see candlesticks coming out of people's ears and things like that. So I've got this thing. It's $99. I'm looking at it right now. And you might want to give it a try for Labor Day.
Well, here's what you, I'm not going to talk about my pick just yet, because I'm looking at your pick and I have an idea.
Yeah.
So you could use now it looks like this comes with both a white and a black background, correct?
If you pay $129, you can get a white and black. If you pay $99, you can get just the white.
Okay, I'd pay the $129, get the white and black, and here's why. You can use the black as what we call a scrim. On a sunny day, it can put the person in open shade, and you could put the white either behind them if you have a cluttery background, or it can actually act as a reflector. Put it on the side, and the light will bounce from that into the subject's eyes. And at 5 by 7 feet, it's perfect size. I think this is a great pick, Jeff.
Yeah, and it's not an umbrella. So if you take it outside, it's not going to fly away.
Yeah, that's always a problem. And at 5 by 7, it's manageable. When you get bigger than that, wind becomes a problem.
Yeah, you will need a stool. I think you'll need a stool or a chair to put your subject in. It may not be tall enough. For people me and Scott, anyway.
Yeah, it's definitely not quite tall enough, probably. Well, my pick, again, I'm cheaper than you this week, Jeff. I just want to point that out because, you know, I always get accused of being expensive. My pick is the Ulanzi LED video light. Now, we've talked about Ulanzi stuff before. It's a Chinese-based company, and let's face it, what they do is knockoffs. But some of their stuff is just darn good, and I have several of their products. And this is a little light like the LumaCube, but it's cheaper. It's $31.96 today is what it is on Amazon, and it comes with a snoot, barn doors, a grid for spots. It comes with gels, and it is tiny. It can fit on a stand. You can put it anywhere. And I wish lights like this existed back when I was a professional portrait photographer, because I would have had tons of fun with them. I bought one to test, and then I bought 9 more because, you know, I like to play. I'm like Joe McNally is with strobes. I like to place a lot of different lights accentuating a specific thing. But this would be a fun thing, especially if you're into macro or you just want a little kicker light to put a catch light in somebody's eyes and you're in the shade or at night. And it's tiny. The only thing I don't like about it is it charges with a bizarre cable that's magnetic as opposed to a traditional USB-C. But, you know, you can live with that. I can live with that. It really works well, lasts a long time. There'll be links to both of these picks from Mr. Jefferson Graham and me in the show notes, which you can find at iPhonePhotoTeam.com. And you should go there and join up for free and sign up for our monthly photo contest where we give stuff away. I don't know we're giving away this month, but it'll be nice. And it's free to enter, and you own your photos. We don't use them. It's just fun. We have circles and bunches of different genres. What's your favorite circle, Jeff?
Black and white.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Because everything looks better in black and white, right?
I actually tend to think that. I tell you what, I did a black and white photograph of Grogu, the child from The Mandalorian, the other day. but nobody liked it because they don't like black and white. So what do you say? What are you going to do? Just us old guys like black and white because that's the first film most of us in our generation bought because it, first of all, color film was more expensive. Second of all, if you did your own processing, it was a lot cheaper to do black and white than color. And third, it was a lot harder to do color.
Tri-X, Pan-X, and Plus-X.
That would be the three right there, yeah. My first roll of film I remember was a Tri-X 400. And you could push it to 8, it'd get real grainy. Can you imagine the kids today seeing something from then a Tri-X pushed to 800? They'd go nuts because they don't want any noise in the pictures now.
It was all dots. I pushed it to 1200, so it was pretty bad. I used to buy the bulk film and then cut my own rolls. Did you do that? That was a way to save money.
And roll them onto a canister?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I bought Pan-X that way because it was half the price if you bought it that way.
Crazy. So yeah. iPhone Photo Team, that's where you'll find Scott. That's where you'll find me. And where else can we find you, Scott?
Well, again, I'm on Flickr at figphotos.com. And I'm on Facebook at Scott Bourne, Twitter at Scott Bourne. Where can we find you, Jeff?
I'm going to encourage everyone to please tune into YouTube and check out my PhotoWalks TV series, youtube.com/PhotoWalks TV. And if you leave me a comment, I'll be your best friend. You can leave comments anywhere at the iPhone Photo Team as well, of course.
I really mean it, folks. This PhotoWalks TV thing that Jeff came up with is just, it's amazing. It's amazing. I look forward to every episode. I'm not just saying that because we do the show together. I'm saying that because it's amazing. He makes me want to travel to places, and I can't wait till I can.
Okay, so, next stop, British Columbia. Here we come.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for tuning into the podcast. We're here every Friday, each and every Friday, and we're so glad that you came. Tell your friends, subscribe via Apple's podcast player or Google's podcast player or one of the other 19 that we're on, and go out and have fun with your camera. We will see you next week.
All right. Bye-bye, everybody.